The Morning Struggle podcast is brought to you by Blue Clover Therapy, a mental health counseling practice in Salt Lake City, Utah. Visit www.blueclovertherapy.com for more information. Blue Clover Therapy, because your mental health deserves a specialist.
Activate.
Welcome to the Morning Struggle podcast, where we take habits of successful people and break them down one at a time into history, science, and action plan so you can implement them into your life to build a better you. Stay tuned.
In five, four,
what?
No, don't do the countdown.
Everybody loves the countdown.
Nobody likes the countdown.
Every time I see someone in the store like, oh my God, are you Ty Shepherd from The Morning Struggle? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, do the countdown.
Nobody does that.
Actually, nobody talks to me anywhere in any facet of my life. It's not a very lonely, invisible life.
Oh, this is very sad.
Yeah, that was personal. But I'm going to bring it back to exciting and uplifting.
Oh, go right ahead.
Welcome everybody to the Morning Struggle podcast.
Hi guys.
I'm Ty.
I'm Jesse.
And we bring you habits of successful people.
Yep.
And today we're talking about
gut feelings.
I want to start this off with an anecdotal story.
Oh my gosh.
About us that ties into my history segment.
Okay.
Anybody from the Utah, Idaho, Wyoming region knows of a place called Wyoming Downs. It's probably second to the Kentucky Derby on like race quality.
Is it still open?
I think it's still going. I think they're going back. Yeah. So it's a little tiny racetrack
for
horses. Yeah. It's a horse racetrack. But you go and you gamble and you
drink
your drinks and you can wear a big hat if you want. You'd be the only person wearing a big hat.
Yeah.
Like the Kentucky Derby kind of thing. But we went one time, just me and you, before we had kids, and we were just having fun and we're putting down our bets.
Yes.
And I said, what horse do you want for your bet? And you said, I like the horse with the socks because socks keep horses' legs warm or whatever.
They do.
And it was like a 200-1 bet.
Yeah, it was really.
I'm not going to throw 10 bucks down on a 200-1 horse. And we were really broke at the time.
So poor.
So what did I do? I went like, well, okay, this one's like 25-1. That's more realistic. He'll win. He's been doing pretty good in the preliminary.
Because you know so much about horse racing.
I know so much about horse racing. So the horse race happens. Your horse wins. Mm-hmm. You're super excited. You're like, oh my gosh, how much money did you win? And I said, none, because I didn't put money down on your horse.
Yeah,
for
you didn't
bet.
Go with my
I didn't go
bet.
With your gut feeling.
You didn't go with my gut feeling.
Which actually makes sense now, because you said, well, the horses with socks are usually cared for better by their owners.
This is just rational I came up with.
Hence, they run faster. And like all day, the socked horses ran faster.
Well, but it was a specific sock.
I know, because you
because
said it
the socks has the ones that have the stripe at the top. And if I just liked the sock style, it actually went really well.
Yeah,
I
was upset.
Yeah,
you weren't upset. I was crazy upset.
Yeah,
but you wanted to go with your gut feeling. That's what we're talking about today.
Yes. Yeah.
How and why you should or shouldn't
go
with your gut feelings. And maybe
so you can win at the horse races.
So you can win at the horse races. Here we go.
This day in history.
Do you ever... I do two daydreams. One, someone drives up in a McLaren F1 and says, I don't want this car anymore. You take it. The clutch is too hard for me.
Oh, man.
The second one is I wake up and I'm like 10 years ago and I go, I know all the sports bets. Like Back to the Future 2.
No.
Yep. I do that all the time. I'm like, okay, that was an underdog story. I'm going to remember that just in case there's a time machine or I wake up in Groundhog Day.
Yes.
And I could put a bet down. So we're going to talk about some of the most paid out underdog bets in sporting history.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah, you ready? We're going to start with boxing. 1990 heavyweight champion, the man, Mike Tyson versus James Buster Douglas. They both had pretty good records, so I don't know why this was such an upset,
right.
But Mike Tyson was like a warm-up fight for Mike Tyson. He was already the heavyweight champion.
Oh.
He was going to get contended on his next fight, and Buster Douglas was just one of those guys who you fight in between.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
42-1 odd, which means a $10 bet would have paid you $420.
Whoa.
Let's say a $100 bet. We're big time in our betting. $100 bet would have paid you $4,200.
That's a pretty good return there.
Yep. So in the 10th round, Douglas floored Tyson with just a huge uppercut. Tyson went down. It was famous because Mike Tyson tried to put his mouthpiece in backwards, and they counted to 10. He was TKO'd. Ready? 1913 Kentucky Derby.
1913?
1913 Kentucky Derby. This was Dunrail. Dunrail was the horse.
Okay.
Dunrail was not doing too good.
Pony.
A few days before the Kentucky Derby, he finished tied for fifth at like a lower, you know, Derby.
Yeah.
So he had 91.45-1 odds.
Whoa.
Which was even less than your horse. We should have really gone on your horse. But Dunrail won by a half length, setting a track time record that day.
No way.
And is the highest Kentucky Derby payout to this day.
Oh, wow.
So $100 would have netted you $9,014.
Whoa.
Yep, that's a pretty crazy one. 1969 World Series. So it was only the Mets' eighth season as a team. So pretty new team.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
And through their first half of the season, they'd never placed higher than ninth.
Oh.
So they held the record for most losses in the 20th century with 120 losses in 1962. So let's just say they were not the best team.
And that's okay. It was in development.
Yeah, yeah. The Orioles came into the World Series after finishing the American League Championship 19 games ahead of second place. Like, the best team of 1960.
Yeah, they're going to win, right?
The Mets won in 5 games.
Yes.
And that would have paid out 100-1 odds, which means $100 would have paid you 10,000 smackaroonies.
Whoa.
Yep. Okay, you ready for the next one?
Yeah, I am.
Let's go soccer. We just went to a soccer game.
We did.
It was amazing. So let's talk about the United States soccer.
Yes.
1950 World Cup.
Uh-huh.
Let's just say America is not the best
when it
comes to men's soccer. Women's soccer, they're amazing. They're world champions. They're great. Men's soccer, I don't know why we didn't get the memo. It's like, hey, boys, let's play some soccer.
Lock it up.
Let's lock it up. But in the previous international matches, the USA had been ousted 45 times to 2 victories to England's team.
Okay, that's a hard
one. So that's a hard one. So England beat us 45 times and we got eked out 2 victories.
Uh-huh.
So there was a 500-1 odd for the USA to win. And the USA won.
Oh, no joke.
So a $100 bet. This is 1950. $100 was a lot of money back then. But it would have netted you 50.
1950, 100 bucks is a lot of money right now.
Oh, I know. I mean, back then it was a lot of money. But 50,000 bucks?
No, joke. That would have been
enough to buy a giant mansion back then. The Miracle on Ice?
I don't think you understand.
The Miracle on Ice?
What are you talking about? Miracle?
Yeah, have you seen the movie Miracle?
I have not.
The USA hockey team?
Oh, yes, I have seen that one.
They had non-professional college kids play professional Russian team.
Yeah.
And they actually beat them in the semifinals. But just that game with the USSR had 1,000-1 odds.
Yeah, no kidding. So it was underdog all the way.
$100 bet would have paid out $100,000.
Whoa.
And that's enough to buy a mansion in 1980s. Just so you know.
In the 80s.
2000 Olympics.
Yeah.
We've got Alexander Krelin. I think that's how you Kerlin, whatever his name is.
Okay.
Versus Rulon Gardner.
Oh, goodness.
Rulon's the underdog.
Yeah.
Because Carolyn had not lost in 15 years in wrestling.
Oh, my gosh.
In the Olympic wrestling, or any wrestling. And he had not given away a single point. You get points in wrestling, and then when you get to whatever points you win or the time limit comes out.
Yeah.
He had not given away a single point in 10 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Imagine being like a basketball team or baseball team and having shutouts for like 10 years.
That's nuts.
This guy was crazy. So the odds of this match were 2,000-1.
Jeez.
So if you would have bet $1,000, you would have won $200,000.
Oh my gosh.
On the Olympics. Are you allowed to bet on the Olympics? Isn't it like a gentleman's sport?
I think people do. I think that you just have to find the right people.
There you go. So that was the highest odds underdog victory that I could find on the one website I looked up. There you go.
No,
there's
but
my history.
See, I get, so like, think about this guy though. Think about this wrestler guy who hadn't been defeated in 15 years and hadn't given a point up in 10 years. And then to get defeated, like that will ruin your psyche.
Where was he from? I think he was from Russia or something like that. I think it doesn't really say here.
I mean, what a victory for the winner, obviously.
Rulon Gardner? Yeah. He became an American icon after that. Is he American? On this one, this didn't say very much on here, so don't use this one at your cocktail party.
Is he American?
Yeah, just don't use this one at your cocktail party.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless you bet on it or you were there, but like...
Right, right.
Don't lie and be like, oh, I was there and I put down a $10 bet, and
I don't
that's why I drive my McLaren F1, you know? So
what? Wait, am I going to come home to this car one day? You will come home to
this car one day.
And I'll be like, hey, where's our house? And you'll be like, I traded it for this car.
You're welcome. And you are welcome. Buckle up, baby. All right, let's get back on track into gut feelings. So those ones, if you would have gone with your gut and you would have bet on the horse with the pretty socks, you win some money. In this one, if you go with your gut feeling, good things can happen, but you also have to be careful, I'm guessing.
Yeah, we're going to talk about why it's good and why it's bad.
Talk about all of it. Yep. All right, here we go.
I'm going to hit you with the definition of gut feeling first.
Let's hear it.
You ready? An immediate or basic feeling or reaction without logical rationale.
Okay, so I listen to my gut, and my gut tells me I'm hungry, even though I just ate.
Not so much like an actual, like, physical.
No. Okay.
It's like let's say we're having an interaction with a stranger.
Right.
Okay.
And you feel uneasy about that interaction.
That is a gut feeling.
That stranger ends up being a serial killer.
Yep, they're a murderer.
Serial killer.
Yes.
Okay.
But that's exactly what it is. So it's an unconscious thing that we do. And they think it's based on our survival mechanisms, where we're looking for small cues to determine so we can predict that behavior ahead of time.
So what kind of, like, small cues? What are small cues?
So small cues, first off, it's part of pattern recognition that we do, and they're stored in long-term memory.
So pattern recognition of people, of just our environment?
All the things. Because we are taking in everything.
Okay.
Okay.
And then our brain files that, and they say, hey, when it's cold outside, I put on a jacket. And I'm less cold?
Kind of, but it's more about survival. And so let's say we're walking down the street, you and me, we're walking down the street, okay? Right. And we see someone with a clipboard.
Okay.
Okay.
We say, go the other side of the street because that person's going to survey us.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And that's the cue because we have been surveyed in the past.
Okay.
So our brain searches unconsciously for different cues that are like, what is that person doing with a clipboard?
So our gut feeling is based on previous experience.
Yes, and we'll get more into that. But we're looking for cues, and then we have expectations of what's going to happen. So the guy with the clipboard, he's going to give us a survey. We're going to go across the street. Now, is he going to give us a survey? I don't know.
Maybe he was going to give us a McLaren. We don't even know.
But based on our experiences, we've determined that's what's going to happen.
Probably.
And then we take action by going to the other side of the street.
Okay.
Okay. And so that's kind of a basic idea of it, but way back when we were surviving and we were meeting strangers, right, we would pay attention to that behavior and be like, ooh, this is going south. This is not going to work for us. Or, oh, they kind of seem friendly, right? And it's finding those micro expressions. It's paying attention to body language. And then it's experiences we've had in the past. So the big thing is the two factors that really play into an accurate or a reliable gut feeling is the quantity of experiences.
So how many you've had?
How many you've had and how much you have been told about.
Oh, so it doesn't just have to be experience. Your great grandma could be like, you don't eat oranges in August because they're bad. And you go, I don't eat oranges in August.
Right, but then you go to eat an orange in August.
And you get that gut feeling. You're like,
I'm not supposed to be doing this.
I'm going to get poisoned. Okay, right. Got it.
So quantity of experiences and then a high validity environment.
Okay.
And a high validity environment is essentially, it's just a predictable environment.
Okay.
Okay. And we see this with like kids of alcoholics. Let's give that example where if your parental unit is intoxicated or not intoxicated, behavior varies wildly. And so
they live in a very unpredictable environment.
Yes. But
their gut feeling is probably not as strong as someone else's.
Not necessarily because they are their predictable event is the unpredictability.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So, yeah. So they're paying attention to all these different, usually body language, because you can kind of see intoxication in body language.
Okay.
And then if they see any of those characteristics, they will react a certain way.
Okay.
And that's why you'll get long-term behaviors in people that you're like, what are you doing? And they're like, I don't know. I just instinctually want
to run.
You're not
in the environment anymore, but it's so honed and it's so ingrained in you. That's your gut feeling.
Yep. And that's your survival mechanism, right?
Makes sense.
So what's really interesting is our body really reacts to this. Like that feeling, it's not a rock in your stomach, right? But we actually talked about the butterflies in your stomach feeling, right? It's a very similar mechanism. So you have that bump of cortisol, let's say person with a clipboard. That's a very safe example. Yeah,
well, person with a clipboard.
Person with a clipboard, right? You have that little bump because you're trying to understand what's going on. So that cortisol is like, ah, right? And then the vagus nerve, which runs from your brain to your tummy, acts up, right? And what's really interesting is there's a second mechanism because your tummy kind of quivers a little bit, the butterflies in your stomach, from that vagus nerve reaction. But then in your tummy, you have an enteric nervous system, ENS.
Okay.
And it actually has 100 million neurons in just in your tummy.
100 million neurons in your stomach.
And that is more than your spinal. In your gut.
Yeah, not my tummy, my stomach, but yeah.
Your tummy.
Your tummy.
Yeah, in your tummy. That's more than in your spinal cord and your peripheral nervous system.
Whoa, that's a lot of nerves.
Yeah, it's not as much as in your brain, but it's a lot. Okay, just in your stomach. Okay. So that's why it's considered a second brain.
Right.
And so your stomach will have an actual reaction to it.
So your guts, like all your stomach area, like your intestines and your stomach and all that?
It's your actual stomach.
Actual stomach.
Your actual stomach, right? And that's why, and we'll get into this later in a different episode, but like if you eat certain food, you'll feel a certain way and you'll have an emotional reaction a certain way. They think it's because of the second brain.
Oh, because it's so sensitive.
So sensitive. So this is interesting. You see a person with a clipboard, you've got that cortisol bump, the vagus nerve runs from your brain because your brain's like, ah, and it goes to your tummy. That ENS system is enacted and it'll be like, oh, we got to go across the street.
Okay, that makes sense.
Right? So it's a very physical reaction that you have as you're having these gut feelings.
So it's not just an emotional reaction.
Nope.
You're actually having a physical reaction with those releases.
Yes, your body is reacting to having to make this decision whether to stay on the side of the road or go to the other side.
Crazy.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah. So is that the science?
That is and you could see why I'm so excited now about this.
Yeah, because essentially your gut feelings are not just, hey, my brain says, you know, go across the street, I can fight it. It's like, I got cortisol run through my veins, so now I'm in fight, flight, freeze, and my stomach is firing as much as my brain does when it's really activated.
Yep.
Like, how am I supposed to fight this?
Yeah, so, exactly, because it's an unconscious reaction.
So do we listen to our gut? Do we not listen to our gut? What do we do?
We'll go into action plan. I'll tell you what to do.
I'm jumping ahead. That's part of action plan. Okay, I get it. So let's go into coffee segment real quick, and we'll go into action plan, and you'll tell me how to use my gut to be successful.
I drank pots and pots and pots and pots of strong black coffee, trying to keep my sleepy soul awake. But the sleepiness still comes along, and when it does, it's fast and strong. I end up with a bad case of the shakes.
Those of you who have been with us for the last few seasons, first of all, we love you, and thank you so much.
You're wonderful.
For being supportive. But you know that we are kind of coffee-centric people.
Yeah.
Our life revolves around coffee. We're not addicts. We're not crazy.
We're not addicts, said the addict.
But it revolves around coffee, right? We
love
to talk about coffee. We love to drink our coffee. It's a pastime.
We go for a walk with your coffee.
But we've talked about how overuse of caffeine is bad
so
for
bad
you
for
and
you.
The acidity in coffee and yada, yada, yada. Well, I'm here today to do two things. One, to tell you that coffee is actually healthy for you. And two, to bring it into gut feelings.
Yeah. Tell
me
about it.
This is a study, and I don't know where this study was from, but it was probably a very prestigious college. Oh, yeah, it is. Baylor University or Baylor College.
Nice.
And that's in Houston, Texas.
Oh, see?
Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas.
Oh, see, that's fair enough.
Yep. I thought Baylor was in like Waco area. Doesn't matter. This is where it says on the article. This is medical news. And the name is Dr. Xiao.
Okay.
And they found out that coffee drinkers who drink at least one cup of coffee a day
have
better gut biomes, have better gut bacteria than everybody else.
Is that true?
That is, well, according to this study, it's true.
Tell me why.
All right. So we have good and bad microbia in our guts.
Yes.
Right? So on this.
Oh my goodness. So is my little bacteria in my tummy having little cups of coffee as I'm drinking coffee? Please tell me yes.
Yep. So analysis revealed that high caffeine consumers had high levels of bacterial genera, and we're going to butcher these ones.
Here we go.
Fusilobacterium and Rosaburia, but low levels of erysipelatoclostridium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Close enough.
That was solid.
And yes, you're welcome for me nailing those. Yes. So the E one's harmful, like E. coli and things like that.
Yeah.
But the Roseberia is good, and the Fecalobacterium is good too. So we have more of that. They also found that that is not only regular coffee, but also in decaf coffee. So it's not just the caffeine, but the beans and the oils from the coffee are actually good for that as well. So you build good bacteria in your gut.
Right.
You may eliminate some of your bad bacteria. You may build a little bit too much of the good bacteria, which turns bad. Don't worry about that. Just drink your one or two cups of coffee
a day.
Don't
get crazy now.
But they said this helps in intestinal glucose and fat transporters. So it reduces diabetes, reduces obesity, and pretty much just makes you healthier all around.
So it's not so much like if you have a giant dew, Mountain Dew, because that has a lot of caffeine.
Don't do
it's
the dew.
Not, it's not that. Don't do the dew. Have a cup of coffee.
Have a cup of coffee.
Because it's something specific with the coffee bean itself.
Yep.
Oh, that's very cool.
There's a few studies that have researched this, and it's still kind of up in the air, but I'm going with this one because it's medical news today.
I like it. And it's from a Texas university.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a fan of Texas.
We're fans of Texas.
We are fans of Texas.
Yep. So anyway, there you go. That's all I got.
That's very cool, though.
So just know that when you're drinking your coffee and you say, oh, I don't know if this is good for me, it's probably pretty good for your
as long as you're not overdoing it. I think it's everything in moderation. But from here on out, my little bacteria is going to have little coffee mugs, and they're going to be sitting there going, thanks,
like
Jesse.
Imagine like your little bacteria is with their own little tiny espresso or
little
coffee
tiny
mugs.
Cups, yeah.
And they're like sitting around, and instead of being like fighting each other like, oh, we're going to, they're like, what are you guys going to be doing today? Like, I don't know, probably digesting some food. And you're like, oh, me too. That sounds great. All right, let's go. I'm all excited about the day. Let's go. Yeah. That's how bacteria sound in your body. Yeah, just in case anybody's, and they're all the same. They're all the same because they reproduce asexually. So anyway, all right, there you go. So let's get back into.
They produce asexually. That's how you determine.
Let's get
their...
back. Yeah, that's how you. If you talk the same, it's science. Let's get back into action plan of gut feelings. And let's talk about what you
let's
do
hope
and
you make
don't
the most
do with
of
your
number.
Gut to be successful.
All right, just like all of my action plans.
Yep.
Be aware.
Be aware.
No, well, kind of, but not really. So yeah. I want you to stop action, whatever that is, and I want you to pause before you make a decision.
Like when you're having a gut feeling situation.
Yeah, when you're kind of noticing something. Like I'm listening to the book Bob Iger, Ride of a Lifetime.
Okay, the ex-Disney CEO. He stepped down.
He just retired. So,
retired, yeah.
It was really interesting listening to his gut feelings about Pixar, Marvel, Lucasfilm films, all of those things, and how he really did have to go with his gut. But there's a lot that I think the thing is that people don't listen to their gut. Right. And the idea is that your brain is amazing. It is absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Your brain is subconsciously so fast and quick and amazing. Just let it do its job.
Right.
And then just guide it down the right path.
Exactly. Like you're going to have to take action. If you're buying Pixar, right, you're going to have to take action.
Probably.
But if your gut is telling you like, yeah, this is a solid situation, then you should really listen to that because your brain has taken all of your experiences, every single one of them, everyone you've had at the grocery store, everyone you had with your mom,
right,
all those things to determine if this feels right.
Or if you're going to go make a big purchase or make a big job change. If your gut says, hey, maybe I shouldn't leave my job right now, or maybe I should leave my job right now.
Right.
Like those gut feelings really are not just, hey, I'm on a whim.
Right.
But how do we make sure we don't make bad decisions?
Well, so first I want you to do some sort of pause activity.
Okay.
So before you make the decision, I mean, meditation is always an option, but for a lot of people, sitting and thinking about something is not going to work. So going on a walk or a hike, specifically in nature, because it's different than the setting you would be making that, unless you're like a park ranger. Go indoors to make your decisions. Okay. But you want to change the environment enough.
Change your setting and think about your question.
Right. Whatever that decision is, prayer is another one of these.
Right.
Being able to pause and take a moment and ruminate on what's happening and really paying attention to your body during that time.
Okay.
Okay.
Because you're getting those reactions.
You're getting those reactions. You need to pay attention to it because your vagus nerve is also on, but the ENS in your tummy is also on.
Okay.
So we gotta pay attention to what's actually happening because there's plenty of times, and we've all done it, where we've had a big decision and we've just decided something going against our gut and it just doesn't feel good.
Right.
And your stomach literally hurts.
Oh.
Your stomach literally like is revolting against your decision because it doesn't feel right.
Okay.
And then it relays that back to the vagus nerve and you'll sit there and be all distressed about it. So makes it's sense. Important that you're paying attention to it. The big thing with really making your gut feelings accurate and reliable is getting in tune with your body.
Okay.
And so doing some sort of physical activity, the research has actually found 20 minutes a day of mindful physical activity. So, and you actually have to be present because like me lifting weights, I'm much more present than when I'm running.
Okay.
So if I have a big decision,
you're more present with.
Yeah. And really paying attention to how your arm moves, how your leg moves, how your body feels, what you smell.
Yoga. Yoga's a good one.
Yoga's a good one. But they found that up to 70% more reliable gut feelings happen with people who spend about 20 minutes a day doing some sort of mindful physical activity.
So this might be why all these successful CEO-esque people work out every day. Because then they have better gut feelings.
Yes.
And then they can act on. And then they make just better decisions.
Yeah, because they're more in tune with their body. Okay. Isn't that just remarkable?
It's remarkable.
And then also, because we want to kind of be able to make our pattern pattern marking more accurate.
So like looking at someone's cues. Like looking at body language, looking at a situation, all that kind of external cues.
Yeah, our quantity of experiences, our different experiences.
Right.
So I want you to be very, very mindful of the interactions that you have. Try to put yourself in situations that you have to make decisions, right?
Okay.
I am not a business takeover person, right? So I probably shouldn't make any buying big businesses decisions, okay, right? That's not my experience, but I'm a therapist. Right. And so if someone needs to tell me something, I'll be able to kind of read those cues because this is what I do for a living. I have lots of experiences doing that, right?
Right.
So you want to pay attention to who you allow in your life and what experiences you have with that person.
Right.
But also that's firsthand experience. But the secondhand experience would be like the things that you allow your brain to take in, like news and Facebook and magazines and billboards and all those things, because if we're reading a story about how, I don't know, a tree fell in someone's yard, right? We had the windstorm the other day, trees are falling everywhere. I might get hyper-focused on this idea that our tree is going to fall in our house.
Okay.
Right? And yes, okay, yes, it can happen, but what are the actual odds? But the thing is every single time I read a story about a tree falling, I am adding that experience to my long-term memory experience.
Your repertoire.
Bank.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. So just be careful of where and what news you're getting.
Yes. And make sure that it's applicable to you and that it's a positive thing.
Yeah. And not just, hey, I like Fox News or I like CNN or I like Facebook, this or that, or I just read Shark Attacks, you know, whatever it is. Because you got to know long-term, like long-term, I want to be here.
Right.
So I'm going to kind of surround myself with these kind of instances so I can be more prepared to make good decisions when I'm there.
Yes. When you end up, so let's take shark attacks.
Okay. Shark
attacks.
Okay.
Let's say I'm really scared of a shark attack.
Right.
But
you want to be a scuba diver.
I want to be a scuba diver. Okay. So I might get kind of obsessive, and we all do this, where we look up shark attacks, right? And we look at, oh my gosh, this person died, and this person died, and this person got bitten, this person lost a leg, right? And we kind of get obsessed with this whole idea. And then we believe that sharks just run around eating people.
Right.
Right?
But there's millions of people who get in the ocean every year, and there's maybe 100-ish, 200 shark attacks a year.
Right. So the better version of that would be to paying attention and looking up what sharks tend to attack scuba divers.
Okay.
What people do when they believe they're about to be attacked or have been attacked by a specific shark, like a tiger shark, are very aggressive, right?
Right.
So, okay, so I'm going to know what a tiger shark looks like. I'm going to know what to do if it's going to attack me. But I'm not going to look up all the shark attacks that happen because really that's not so applicable to me.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
So you want to do applicable to you.
Yeah.
So maybe if I want to scuba dive in this location, you know, at this time,
right,
well, how many shark attacks are there? Because I'm scuba diving in, you know, off the coast of, you know, Florida, that might be different. I won't need to look at shark attacks in Australia.
Exactly.
Okay. So
moving forward, we're okay. Action planning forward
with your information.
If I get attacked by a shark, that's what's going on. Does that make sense?
Makes sense.
And then I want you to actually go with your gut, and this can be a small decision. It could be like, where are we going to eat tonight? Right.
Okay.
My gut says I want to In-N-Out burger, right?
Right.
So go with your gut and then reevaluate at the end of it if that was a good choice or not. And then what factors played into that?
So then you can put that into your repertoire.
Yeah. And be like, yeah, okay, I like hamburgers at In-N-Out. That's okay. Great. Right? But then let's say I didn't like it and everybody was upset. Okay, so what played into that decision that took away from, like, why was my gut not so accurate about that decision?
Okay.
Oh, okay. Well, I was really hungry. We were in the area. Everybody was whining.
Right.
Like, and so it's like, okay, so maybe that wasn't such a good decision. How do I prep that later for a gut reaction?
For next time.
Yeah. But it's really evaluating how reliable it was and how you actually felt post as well.
Okay. So we need to assess where we're at. We need to make sure we're exercising 20 minutes a day.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be vigorous. Not it's vigorous. Mindful physical Just activity.
Mindful physical activity. Yep. We need to research or surround ourselves with input and information for where we want to be.
Yep.
And then when we have gut reactions and we act on them, we need to reminisce on that, kind of reevaluate how that worked. So then we can actually, instead of just repeating the same mistakes over and over, we can put that into our subconscious so our gut feelings are more accurate in the future.
Yeah, we're building on these gut feelings and we're building on their reliability.
Okay, I mean, it makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. I like it. I'm gonna start going with my gut more. My gut is always saying that I'm hungry. So that's what I'm going to do.
Perfect.
But I'm going to do the steps. So I'm not just going to eat until I'm sick. I'm going to reevaluate every time.
That's right.
So, but no, seriously, go out there, evaluate this stuff, hone your gut feelings, because acting on your gut always feels better as well.
Yes.
So add some logic into there so your gut feelings are good. And as always, go out and
build a better you.
Thanks, guys.